This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Florida. Clearwater, Florida. What am I saying? Of course, all of Florida is glorious, but particularly Clearwater, Florida. It's so beautiful here, and we have miles and miles of beaches, and if you are looking for a place to read a good book, this is the ideal place. Now, I'm just about going crazy here. And you know, once a month I have my legal eagle, Bill Larson, come in and talk to us and tell us about, the laws that govern intellectual property and about different parts of contracts that writers have to be able to understand. And I have also, I ask him, legal questions from time to time. He is my intellectual property lawyer, and he's also my patent lawyer. I have four patents, and he and his people, he has absolutely fantastic people who do patent research, and they got me four patents. So they're just a wonderful firm. It's called Larson & Larson, and they have offices here in the Bay Area, one in Tampa and one in St. Petersburg. So it is always wonderful when I get to ask him a legal question, and sometimes I get some free advice. I didn't ask him this, but I will. So until I ask him, I don't think I should actually mention a name of a company or companies that I think are really trying to rip writers off. But you might recognize it, because I have heard from many writers now, and I mentioned last week, I mentioned one of the writers who has been on the show. He was on about a year ago. He wrote a very nice book, and of course, in his mind, and this happens to writers, you want this book that you love and the characters you love, and you hope to see them someday on the big screen. And unfortunately, there are so many scams out there. It is just overwhelming right now. And in all the businesses, I've been in a lot of different businesses over the years. My husband was in real estate and construction. And so we've seen all types of scams. But I had not been aware until one of the writers who, has been on the program brought it to my attention, how many emails were coming in from people offering to take their books, to take an author's book, and to turn it into a screenplay. And, of course, the end result would be that not only would you get a script of your book, you would also get an introduction to, a producer, the movers and shakers in Hollywood. Now, this is not the way it works. I've had three of my spec scripts were optioned in Hollywood. I've written a number of scripts for hire. And I tell you that is not how Hollywood works. It is never going, maybe a miracle would happen, but these are scams. And the scammers are getting smarter and smarter. So they address the problem right from the beginning. They know already. They've heard, everyone, this one's doing it, this one's sending out, offers, and this one. So now they address it right in the beginning. They say, well, would you like to identify a scam so you can tell the difference between a scam and a real offer to take your book and turn it into a script? So they address the problem, and they're very clever. And it's always happens when you meet a criminal or you hear about a criminal, you say, well, they're so smart, they managed to pull this stunt. Why didn't they use their intelligence for something good? But there must be something, there's something in human nature that we don't understand a lot about human nature, but particularly about this. And so it's really, okay. I just waiting. I think I've got a, hold on. I think I have a call coming in, but do I have a call? No. Okay. I was, waiting for somebody, but, she's had a little delay. So I'm going to, talk about this subject because this is an important subject. So as I mentioned, I had a gentleman last week who, mentioned he had a problem, and I have sent him now on to someone to, I hope, help him. Once you pay this money, you'll never see it again. So I'm just going to talk about this one particular scam. And when you are trying, when you are really hoping to have your book turned into a script, sometimes you just lose your mind. It's as simple as that. But I'm telling you that when you get an offer, first of all, when you get an offer, just be suspicious. I love so many of the offers are related. The first step is always $39. $39 to do this. $39 to learn this. $39. And I'm not sure. I have to ask Bill if $39, like if that's the cutoff point, so that if it's above $39, then it is grand theft, and if it's below, like $40 is grand theft, and below that is not grand theft or something, because there's some reason. I see this in so many of the different offers that they are sending in, $39, $39. But that's only the start. Believe me, $39 is not what they want. They want much, much bigger money. And, you know, as P.T. Barnum said, you know, there's a sucker born every minute. And unfortunately, they all think that all of these people out there in Hollywood who are trying to cheat you are looking for one of you who was born in a minute. Because what they're doing is they suck you in with a $39 offer, and gradually it builds up. I am telling you that what these people are doing is they are taking the money and they are enjoying themselves at the Beverly Hills Hotel and perhaps at the Polo Lounge, although maybe it's a little expensive at the Polo Lounge. So probably the Fountain Coffee Room. Now, if you've never been to the Fountain Coffee Room at Beverly Hills Hotel, it is really quite amazing. It's one of those old-fashioned counters, curvy counters. It's really beautiful. And Marilyn Monroe was discovered there. And so when you go there, it's really great. And I know that a lot of these people who are ripping writers off are using the money that they get to go to the Fountain Cafe, the Polo Lounge, or just to sit around the pool in hopes that they will meet somebody who will help their career, because they're not really there to help your career. So if you get an offer where they say, for $40, we're going to check out the first 10 pages. Boy, oh boy, we're going to read it. Now, I looked at quite a few websites, but one in particular, which really annoys me, because the people are, it's a beautiful website, but they are using the same general style of the Writers Guild of America. So they look very official. It's like when you get an offer in the mail from some company called Federal something or the other. It does not mean they are part of the federal government. And I've always thought that should be illegal, because I know many people have fallen for these scams, federal this or federal that, and they're not, and thinking that they are part of the federal government. And in the same way, I really hate that people can use the same format as a real company, and it just sort of mentally it sucks you in. You don't even stop to think, who are they? And unless you do a search, an internet search, like I do, a who is it, an IMDb search, or I go to the Producers Guild, the Writers Guild, I check these people out. And in this particular instance, this company, I mean, all of the people involved were what we call in the business and in IMDb, they are listed as miscellaneous crew. That means they are nothing. They are zero. They are worth nothing. And of course, when they write themselves up, they say they were involved in this famous picture, which won an Academy Award, and this famous picture, which you know, had a box office of $300 million or whatever. But, and it's true, they were involved in that picture, but they were miscellaneous crew. And in some cases, not only were they not even, they were miscellaneous crew, but they were on the thanks list. Now, below miscellaneous crew, you have a list of people who are thanked at the bottom of a film. And those people are lower than low. I mean, the guy who pushes a broom is higher than them. So you cannot fall for this. I really, really hope that I don't hear from any more of you who are falling for these scams, because you won't get your money back. It's really hard to get your money back from these people. But in this particular one, they're asking for $1,095. Now, why? Again, I don't know. Why they think that 95, extra 95 is, I don't know. It right away, it sounds phony to me. If I was going to charge, and you know, if I charge for a script to write a script, I say $25,000. That's the going rate for a script. I don't say $25,049. It's crazy. Anyway, I'm just warning you. Please be careful out there. I think there's a lot of people out there. Well, they see you hear about Netflix, you hear about all of this. And you think that you can have a shortcut. It doesn't work. We'll talk more about it with some other people who are going to be coming on the program later this in July, including a Hollywood, real Hollywood agent who will tell us that how to do it. But meanwhile, I'm very happy that I have brought back to Joy on Paper an author whose book, well, you know, it's so funny. It's amazing what you learn when you're sometimes in the $1 store. I was in the $1 store, and there I was, and the lady in front of me was telling the, you know how they asked, did you find everything you want? And the lady is saying, well, no, I can't find a bottle brush. And the girl behind at the checkout counter, what? A bottle brush. And she offers this kind of brush or that kind of, and the lady said, no, a bottle brush, you know, a bottle brush, a baby's bottle brush. And that girl, poor girl, she looked at her like, are you crazy? I never heard of a baby bottle brush, because all the baby bottles today are plastic. They have those plastic inserts. So this generation of kids have never seen a old-fashioned baby bottle. But Rick Bava has, and he is an expert on baby boomers, and his book, In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation, is a real hit, and it's funny and touching, and you learn a lot. And so is Rick there? Rick, are you here?
Yeah, I sure am, Patsy. What an honor to be joining you again. You know, the last time we did an interview together, you're such a wonderful interviewer. We got so much positive feedback to our interview, and so when I had the opportunity to be invited by you again today, I just jumped at the chance. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'd also like to send out a special hello to Jim Lamb, the wonderful news featured writer who lives in the Tampa Bay, St. Petersburg area. He's a very loyal listener of your program, and actually was one that really introduced us together. So thank you for letting me join you again today.
Oh, well, I often think about you, especially when things pop up like this, where I'm standing in line and the girl has no, she looked at this lady like a bottle brush for a baby bottle. Why would you put up, you know, she's thinking about those plastic inserts, so she can't imagine why you would need a bottle brush.
You know, my dad had an interesting idea many years ago when he was living, and I thought it was a great idea. He thought it would be wonderful if the older generation would go into schools and let them learn real-time history by talking to people from that generation. In other words, if you were going to talk to somebody about World War II, maybe you could have somebody who actually participated in World War II. And I think people would learn a lot just by the interaction. As a baby boomer, Patsy, and you know this better than most, we've really had a wonderful experience in our lifetime thus far, and a lot has happened, a lot of changes, a lot of technology changes, cultural changes, and it is interesting to be able to share and communicate with younger people, really, and it's a great learning experience. So I applaud you for bringing this topic up.
Okay. Well, it's so much fun to talk to you all the time because you have delved into this idea of what baby boomers are like today, what they went through. When you mentioned Jim Lamb, and I wanted to say, Jim is an absolutely marvelous writer. He wrote a book about the Vietnam War, and called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales: How I Survived Vietnam and Kept My Sense of Humor. And it's available on Amazon. His initials are J.S. Lamb. And not only is Jim a wonderful author with this book, but he's a poet. And later on in the program, I'm going to be talking about the importance of poetry for writers and how it can help a writer to just be a better writer, to understand the flow of words. So, it's when we're talking to younger generation, and so many of them don't know simple things like when the Vietnam War was or what a bottle brush, let alone if you ask them. Nowadays, they don't even know what a fax is,
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You see at the bottom, when people have their content information on their email, the pre-script, and you see the F for fax, and a lot of times people say, what is that? And of course, I remember being in the office and how wonderful that was the first time it came through. But I think you're on to something with this conversation, because what I think really baby boomers are all about is where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. Just like you introduced the segment, there's so many issues that they're dealing with today. They have a They don't live in the past, but they like to reflect on the past, and they're also looking forward to the path forward. So it's a good generational type topic that you started our discussion with.
Well, tell people a little bit about how you did your research, your travels, in order to meet baby boomers and to get a better look into what they're thinking and the problems that they have, but also all the joys that they have in looking back at the past.
Oh, thanks for the question, Patsy. I think the best way to introduce it is, a lot of baby boomers, I wanted an encore career. I was very lucky to be a successful business person, a corporate executive, and around the 2008-2009 time frame, with the help of my best friend, who was a distinguished professor at the University of Oregon, we started to talk about how I could continue to contribute to society, but in another role. And with the help of his department, his students, we started to try a lot of ideas and began to look at being an ability to chronicle the baby boomer generation. So I started writing about it, started giving talks about it, started doing discussion groups, and that kind of led to the idea of doing a book. And we thought that the best way to do a book would be to go to the source. So I traveled the country for 2 years interviewing hundreds of baby boomers, having informal discussions, formal discussions, learning about our generation. And it was from those conversations that the topics of what is important to baby boomers really came to light. And in the book, we discuss the items that are front and center that is really based on a composite of the top topics that relate to baby boomers. There's some, as you say, heartwarming moments of past experience. There are issues that baby boomers are dealing with now. And then there are discussions of the things that baby boomers have to look forward to, like financial planning, Social Security, you know, et cetera, health issues, health and wellness. But the real paramount issue is just getting to engulf myself in our generation. I must tell you, it's probably the experience of a lifetime. I can't imagine how anybody could be lucky enough to have an experience like that. And I guess what I'm really pleased about is the generosity of baby boomers who would just share with you, you know, their thoughts. And I think it's helped a lot of people. A lot of people, of course, have read the book, and a lot of people have commented about the book, but they say it from the standpoint of living their own life through reading about the book. And of course, you and I are both baby boomers, so we like to hear that kind of conversation. And my own experiences are in it too. You can't write a book like that without sharing your own experiences to bring to the table. And that's fair to do, fair to the reader by doing that.
Well, I have mentioned it to the younger generation, because I tell them, you know, you have to think about things that in many ways the baby boomer generation didn't think about. Somehow, you know, we were in many ways very optimistic people.
Right.
We believed that everything good was going to happen. And sometimes people who feel that way don't prepare. And so
yeah.
I'm thinking that, and it's true that some of the younger generation, I was recently up in Yale visiting my son, and I tell you, I was amazed at the conversations of the younger generation. Of they were thinking about, I mean, they were at their age, they're all in their 20s, they're thinking about pension plans, they're thinking about investments, they're thinking about buying land. It's completely, when we were young, we didn't think of it that way in most cases. I mean, I bought a house when I was very young, mostly because I was obsessed with history. I bought a house in England, and I wanted a house near where Jane Austen was born.
Oh, Jane Austen, right.
So, you know, but it wasn't the idea of as an investment for old age, but the young people are thinking that way.
Well, the last time that we spoke on the radio together, you might have you might recall that we were talking about the Bank of America study, and they were talking about how this younger generation are better savers, and how they in some ways identify more with our parents, the greatest generation. I think it's great that they have those kinds of tools, but I really appreciate you mentioning the component of bringing the book and the knowledge to the younger generation. As you know, I've become very active with Georgetown University. Dr. Pamela Saunders, who runs the aging and health department there, and become an advocate for their department, become involved in that, and it just seems that there are a lot of universities now across the country which are looking at looking back at other generations as a component to forming a career for the future of aging and health. So I think you've made a good relationship there, and the symmetry across generational lines for learning, and we hope that my book, it plays a small role in that, and we think it's helping the younger generation.
Absolutely. Now I have to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the fun side of the boomer generation and some of the challenges. Okay.
Sure. Of course.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest, Rick Bava, who wrote a wonderful book called In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation. And Rick, hi.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Patsy.
Okay, I was just thinking we were in commercial that your book is actually a fantastic research tool for writers, because if a younger person is writing a book that has some elements of those years, this book is really valuable because you have wonderful store interviews, your interviews where you did with different, you know, your personal interviews with people are really so full of very important information, and then your own personal story about your life and about your family also I really fill it in. And this is one of the things that when somebody's a younger person is writing and they want to make their characters richer and with more depth, it's important that they know some of the things that you've written in this book, because you cover a lot of things, not just you know, Medicare and estate planning, but things like movies and music. Oh, sure. And so any writer, I would really recommend this for any writer, just to have this at their fingertips, because there are so many little things in here, the little stories, the vignettes that you put, that really, I think, will, you know, just be something that will spark some interest.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. My wife is a molecular biologist by trade. She's a very smart PhD, and she's very detailed. And of course, she edited the book, and she thought that one of the things that would really help the reader would be to make sure there were some timelines in there and be able to bring about stories where, just like you say, if people wanted to research the baby boomer generation, they'd be able to see the accuracy of the data. Like if you're going to talk about, you know, Sandy Koufax and pitching against the Yankees, you know, you got to make sure you highlight the 1963 World Series game and put some detail where he struck out 15 people. And it was that kind of detail that I think is helping the younger generation study the baby boomer generation, in some ways, maybe like Tom Brokaw's book for, you know, the greatest generation. So I think she deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think it really has made the book much more appealing. And yes, those chapters on television and sports and music and movies, I think really, you know, brought some nice feeling to the baby boomer generation, you know, because you saw some discussion of movies. Of course, baby boomers are the television generation. So when you start talking about television series and wonderful programs that we watched as young people, sitcoms, etc., you know, it brings about the story. And of course, when you're listening to music and you hear a song, it brings you back to a time and place, doesn't it, Patsy?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, there are so many of the younger generation who are very much into retro, and they are watching the old movies on TCM and really enjoying them.
Oh, yes. Yes, there's some great stories about people really discovering, you know, the wonderful actor Sidney Poitier, you know, up with his movies like To Sir With Love and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And of course, what's being talked about a lot from a retro standpoint is kind of a resurgence of The Graduate. And of course, it's surprising to me, but it's funny to watch the young people quote lines from The Godfather, right? It's really funny. You know, I was in college when The Godfather came out, so it was it's really kind of ironic.
Now, of course, speaking of college, we have to mention University of Wisconsin.
Yes, we do. That's our family connection, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
I'm glad to see your son is doing really well. And of course, when you and I talk off the air, we always kid towards the end of the conversation about all those University of Wisconsin Badgers kind of stick together.
Exactly. Well, he really loves it there. And the reason I went up to Yale, he was invited to go over there and give a speech, which was really wonderful.
Wow. How proud you must have been.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. He's doing his PhD in biomedical engineering. And so he's got one more year to go.
Sure.
So that's exciting, but it is a wonderful school and an amazing campus. And
you know, it's really interesting. I think we might have mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again, that professor at the University of Oregon that really kind of helped become a foundation point for this career of mine and being a thought leader for the baby boomer generation was actually my college roommate at the University of Wisconsin, and we've been lifelong friends since. You know, the story goes, best man for each other's wedding, you know, and I was godfather for his first child. And so recently, when my wife and I went to the University of Wisconsin and were walking the campus, all the wonderful memories that you know, that we had and we were able to discuss as part of my wonderful experience at Wisconsin. The campus looks good. I know your son must really enjoy being there.
Absolutely. He loves it. Now, of course, in those days when you went to school, there was still a set curriculum, I think. One had to actually study literature and a little bit of math and a little bit, right?
Right. That's really true. Even though I was a communications major with a business bent, you had, you know, 12 credits of science, 12 credits of math. You know, some of my favorite courses are sociology courses and psychology courses and literature courses. I wouldn't have even been able to learn to write if I wasn't forced to take those kind of courses. And it's a kind of a broad-based education that we may be missing.
Oh, we are missing. I can tell you, we are missing a lot in the current curriculum, because in some school, universities, they've given up even asking people to learn things like algebra, and let alone calculus.
And it's difficult to function. It's really even the simplest things, it's difficult to function. And, you know, there's also something, too, about broad-based education. And this also applies to another subject. I have nieces and nephews who are just wonderful, wonderful athletes. They live in the Chicago area. And, you know, I want to see that that they are also making sure that they're getting an education at the same time of learning sports. But I bring up the sports example because the youngsters start to specialize at such a young age in one sport. And you take somebody like Jack Nicklaus, who's the greatest golfer of all time. He played high school basketball. He played other sports in college, even when he was at Ohio State. And, you know, when you look at somebody like Jack Nicklaus, you see an educated man who is now a famous golf course designer, besides being a fantastic athlete. And that's because of the basis point he had at Ohio State when he was going to college.
Absolutely. And one of the things, of course, we did in the old days, we required kids to read classics. And of course, we even insisted that they learn some poetry. And I had a writer on the other day, and I read her book, and I thought, as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, this is really good. And it's her first book. And I'm saying to myself, wow, for a first book, I mean, this woman has a way with words. She's really good, really good. And as I'm reading, more and more I realize this, she's, you know, you just don't, I don't usually get a first-time writer who's so good. And then, of course, when I talk to her, she says, she was writing poetry. And that explains it, because when you know poetry, when you understand, when you have that feel for poetry, it just, it gives you a different feel for the language. And
right,
so I think that's one of the subjects that I think kids should learn in college. I don't care if you're studying, you know, to be a PhD in biomedical engineering or a molecular biologist or whatever. Having
you
poetry.
You know, it's really interesting about the classics, and of course you mentioned the wonderful Jane Austen, and her writing still comes to life, and how young girls love reading Jane Austen. But you know, Patsy, and I think you'll identify with this conversation. I go to a lot of libraries and give a lot of talks, and somewhere along the line when we're doing Q&A, it comes up with the subject, well, what is your favorite book, right? What is the if you could read one book, what it is? And of course, I always answer, you know, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, right? But you know, I think about that. I've probably read that at different phases of my life now, you know, dating back first in high school and then through the different segments of my life. And, you know, when you read someone like F. Scott Fitzgerald, you know, and you get that kind of history, may it be literature, poetry, whatever, you read the greats, right? That's a, you know, for a writer, for people who love books, for people who love words and vocabulary, that's the topic of all topics, as you're bringing up right now.
And so, you know, as I want people to read more. And
right.
one of the reasons I like your book is that it does, I think it sort of will get people interested in other, you know, other areas. Once they read a little bit about this, a little bit about that, they'll say, well, there's more to learn. There's more to know. And that's one of the wonderful things about being a writer is you can bring this to the forefront. You can bring ideas to people on subjects that they might not have thought about until they read your words.
Well, you know, you've always been very modest, but one of the things that your audience should know is your work, your program, your advocacy for reading and books has done a world of good. You've contributed so much to reading and the way people look at books. That's why your program is so popular. So you deserve a lot of credit for what you've been doing to advance what, you know, books and reading in this country.
Well, you know, one of the things I do want now more and more, as I want people to become writers, even if you only have one book in you, there is a book in you. And the way to get to that point is to start just appreciating language. So I want to play a poem from a poet who I admire very much, and we'll just listen to the first poem. Okay. Listen.
I have daughters and I have sons. Who's out there at 6 a.m.? The man throwing newspapers onto the porch, and the roaming souls suddenly drawn down into their sleeping bodies. Wild words of Jacobema go on praising the human body, but heavy words of the ascetics sway in the fall gales. Do I have a right to my poems, to my jokes, to my loves? Oh, foolish man, knowing nothing less than nothing about desire. I have daughters and I have sons. When one of them lays a hand on my shoulder, shining fish turns suddenly into deep sea. At this age, I especially love dawn on the sea, stars above the trees, pages in the threefold life, in the pale faces of baby mice. Perhaps our life is made of struts and paper, like those early Wright brothers' planes. Neighbors run along holding the wingtips. I do love Yeats's fierceness as he jumped into a poem, and that lovely calm in my father's hands as he buttoned his coat.
Okay, that's Robert Bly, and as you heard,
how powerful!
Isn't it powerful? What a voice, and what a poet!
Oh, and just the flow, the symmetry, the tone, the picture that you have in your mind as you're listening to that. I mean, it's just amazing. I was just thinking about that famous Neil Young song, you know, the one where he sings about, "Oh man, you know, take a look at yourself." And it's just so unbelievable. Well, of course, that's one of the greats, Robert Bly. So that's good for you.
I want more and more people to understand that poetry is so accessible, because anybody can write a poem. You know, you don't have to rhyme. And as he says, "I have daughters and I have sons." He started
I love that. That tells the story right at the beginning, and he comes back to it. Yeah, unbelievable. Sure.
And he's a great poet. He's 91 years old now, and his daughter, daughter is an author, Eloisa James, and she's been on my program. She writes wonderful romance fiction, historical romance, and I was really hoping to have her father on, but it's a little difficult now for him to do a radio show. But he's powerful, and you can. He's accessible on YouTube, and it's always difficult to tell people, well, you should read this poet or this, you know, a particular poet. Everybody has a feel, but if you want to really have an idea of how powerful words can be, go and listen to some of the poets that are available on YouTube. Yeah. Robert Bly is among the best, but I also interviewed the poet laureate Juan Jose Ferreira, Herrera, who was on my program. He was wonderful, and it doesn't matter whether you're reading Emily Dickinson or whoever. Just learn that flow, the wonderful way of using words, and so. Yeah. It's just another thing that, and particularly Robert Bly, of course, he is of that older generation.
The great generation. I was thinking of that too. I had three thoughts when I was listening to the poem. First of all, the power of it, the symmetry, the way, the story that it told. But I also you know, because of my work, quickly went to the thought pattern of, just another example of, you know, the greatest generation, right? The people of that generation, I don't know, there's something special about them, Patsy.
Absolutely. And I want people to think about just reading more poetry. It's a very relaxing thing. It's amazing. The nice thing about poetry, it can be long. You can have very long poems or you can have very short poems, but even one a day, it really makes you, I think, a calmer person, because there's something about the words that a poet selects, whether it's, you know,
and some of the great lyricists of all time were really poets, you know, people from music of my generation, like Paul Simon is really a great great poet from the previous generation, you know, the great songs of Rodgers and Hammerstein or Rodgers and Hart, you know, really tell that certain kind of poetry. But you know, there's something settling about, soft light and reading poetry and having your thoughts come to fruition. And this is the whole subject matter of poetry, great reading, great fiction, great books that tell a story, great books that bring you to a point in time. And as I said earlier, you bring those out, every show. And by the way, I would like to share with your audience that you have a wonderful website. I get so many compliments from the interview. You're very kind to have our interview from the last time as one of your featured interviews. And I get so many kind comments about, listening to that interview. So I encourage people to go to your website and listen to some of the past interviews. They're really great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's a lot of work.
A lot of work.
I do want people to go to the website. It is radio-joyonpaper.com, and I have interviews there, not just with all of the authors that I've interviewed, and I've now interviewed 9 Mystery Writer of America grandmasters, and I've got 2 more scheduled to come on in July and August. So I really enjoying that. I've also got some Pulitzer Prize winning authors coming on, but as I said, one of my greatest joys is to have new authors, to have authors.
Sure.
I love to have authors on the release date of their first book.
That's such an honor for them. I mean, can you imagine after all the hard, painstaking work and you know, it's not easy to write a book. I can honestly tell you. But when you come to that conclusion and you've come to that certain point in your life where the book is about released, to be honored to be on a program like yours on the release date is such a positive feeling, an adrenaline rush, really.
And it was such an amazing thing that when I started this program, I started with one day a week, and I started it on a Tuesday, and it didn't correlate with me the importance of Tuesday, because most major publishing houses release their books on Tuesday, and this has been going on all the major publishing houses, their release date is Tuesday, and people always ask me, well, why Tuesday, not Monday? Well, who wants to do anything on Monday? But actually, it's because Tuesday was always considered a good luck day. So particularly for Jewish people, and so many people in printing business and the publishing business are Jewish. And so it's a good luck day. So to release your book on Tuesday gives that a little bit extra good luck. And so I have Tuesdays are always, I could book Tuesday from morning to night because that's the date.
Well, it's such a crescendo, you know, to have that be the topper. But I do understand, and I hope I'm not getting ahead of things, there has been some positive rumors that you may expand to more days.
I hope so. I would love to.
Is that in the works? Because I know your audience would really welcome it.
Well, it is in the works because I would really, I'd love to be on 5 days a week because right now it's funny. Sometimes I have really famous, a publicist will call with a really famous author and I say, I can't. And they say, "What? Do you know who I'm talking about?" I say, "Yes, mm-hmm. I know, but you know, I'm on 2 days a week. I need 5 days a week." So, people could help me by going to Facebook and liking me. I would like that would really help. So, go to Facebook and Facebook. It's Joy Radio Joy on Paper without that dash. I couldn't get the dash in there. So it's Radio Joy on Paper, and just like me on Facebook, and hopefully in the near future I'll be 5 days a week because I love talking about books, as you know.
Yeah, my wife and I go to both pages, your personal page, Patsy Gill, and of course the Joy on Paper. In fact, I think I just posted on about Joy on Paper both on Facebook and Twitter today.
Okay.
So always pleased to do that.
Well, I appreciate it because I appreciate that you came on today with short notice, but it's always wonderful to talk to you, and I will have you back again. Again, I want to tell people, all the writers out there, this is a resource book for you. You really should have Rick's book right there on the bookshelf next to you when you're writing, and just be inspired.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. Always a pleasure to talk to you and to be part of your audience.
Okay. Well, we'll talk again soon, okay?
All righty.
Okay.
Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. That was nice of him to come on today. I wanted, again, to remind everybody one more time, go to Facebook and like me. And meanwhile, remember that one of the joys of life, and Rick knows about it, is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. And also to make sure that you say something nice to somebody. It was funny. When I was in the $1 store, and this lady was going a little bit crazy because the girl was not very helpful about this bottle brush. And so I was really nice to her, and I got in a conversation, and I, you know, mentioned about Rick's book, actually, which is why Rick came to my head when I was looking for a guest for today, because I had another author on. I was supposed to have a romance author on, but she couldn't make it. We will talk about that reason when she comes pretty soon. But meanwhile, I do want to tell everyone again, thank you so much if you go to my webpage. And mostly I want to thank Big Ed in the control room because he's always so good to me and he's saluting me and I'm saluting him. And I just want to tell everyone have an absolutely wonderful weekend and read a book and read poetry. Robert Bly is available on YouTube, and just listening to his voice will make you feel good. Okay, bye-bye now.